Here's an opportunity for you to get up to 75% off many of the resources you hear us promote on Issues Etc. It's Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale from 8 in the morning until noon on Saturday, November the 2nd. Concordia Publishing House is located south of Interstate 44 at 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. The 2013 warehouse sale, Saturday morning, November the 2nd at Concordia Publishing House, 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Well, there was a law that was passed in Texas that would have required of abortion clinics that the doctor performing the abortion get hospital privileges within 30 miles of the clinic where he was performing his abortions, and that would have put some restrictions on the usage of RU486, an abortion-inducing drug. And most recently, a federal judge has struck down the key parts, the parts that mattered, in this new Texas law, and he has his reasons. Joining us to respond to the striking down of these provisions in the law and to the judge's comments, Emily Horn. She's a member of the legislative team for Texas Right to Life. Emily, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
U.S. District Judge Lee Yeakel said that one of the reasons that he blocked some of the provisions in this Texas law is that it would place a substantial obstacle in the path of women seeking an abortion of a non-viable fetus, his words, and that it was an undue burden to the woman. How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, I think it's really interesting that he called something that would require the doctor to have higher safety standards and an additional requirement and undue burden to the woman, since it's not actually an action that she has to perform. This is a restriction on the doctor. This is some way for the doctor to become accountable to his peers and other doctors in the area. So I don't see how a common sense safety measure like that would create an extra burden for the woman. That's my initial response. The other thing to note here is that, yes, while some key portions of this law were overturned, there were other portions of the law that were not even challenged and that have actually already gone to effect. For example, the preborn pain ban, which says that at the age that children can feel pain, which is 20 weeks, there's an outright ban now in Texas on aborting them at 20 weeks, and that part was not challenged, and that part actually went into effect yesterday. So that is kind of an unsung victory for the pro-life movement and something that we're very excited about.
Well, I wonder about this. One of the provisions that was struck down by the judge was a requirement that the doctor get admitting privileges within 30 miles of the clinic where he's going to perform his abortion. Why was that an important restriction to place upon the doctor? Why was that an important requirement to put upon an abortionist?
Sure. Honestly, it's because a lot of doctors, when they do these abortion clinics, they might work at 3 or 4 or 5 abortion clinics. They might come in for one day and perform a bunch of abortions and then go to the next town. And in a case like that, the woman wouldn't necessarily have the benefit of having that physician around should she develop a complication the next day. The idea behind the admitting privileges is to connect him with a local hospital that has an example of his history that can keep him accountable if there is a high complication record, something like that. It basically gives a group of his peers a way to keep him accountable for his procedures and practices and rate of complications. So, and also, if the woman did have a complication, it's likely that she would be going to one of those hospitals, and they would know which doctor she'd be dealing with, and they'd be able to pull up his records and possibly talk to him, get her medical records, things like that. It just gives them accountability for the doctors that may not even be in that town the next day.
What kind of restrictions did the provision on RU486 and other drugs, abortion-inducing drugs, as the law originally stood and was passed, what did it require of the doctor there?
What it required, the biggest thing was, and what it said was that doctors had to abide by the Federal Drug and Food Administration, FDA, requirements for the original recommendations for that drug, which were not being followed. This one of the things was it's a two-day, when you take the abortion pill, it's a two-day process, and you go to the abortion clinic for the first day, you get the dosage of that pill that first day, and then what the doctors do at that point is they send you home and they tell you to take the second dosage of the pill in 24 hours. And what the FDA recommends is the doctor actually is present for both doses of that. So, I mean, it seems really common sense. It requires the doctor to be present for when he's administering the abortion pill. That's the biggest recognizable restriction that it would have placed on medical abortions.
What is the rationale here? I simply do not understand why it is a judge would think that an abortionist, and we're told that this is a routine medical procedure, would not willingly submit to these restrictions that are simply reasonable. If it were a different drug than RU486, if it were a different procedure than surgical abortion, no one would be even batting an eye. Why is abortion for some reason
right?
Exempt?
It just seems amazing when you think about how politicized abortion has become, that the most common sense medical practices are not being followed, and are, you know, the abortion industry is kicking and screaming when they're being asked to follow really common sense medical practice, to be present when you get the drug. You know, in some cases, this is not legal in Texas, but in some cases where you hear of the webcam abortions, a doctor will be on a computer screen Skyping with the patient, not even physically present for the first dose. I mean, it's unbelievable when you hear some of these stories, but, I mean, it's one of those things where abortion laws and common sense restrictions are so hard to pass because the abortion industry lobbies so hard against any regulation or restriction whatsoever.
Now, you mentioned before that there were other provisions that did pass that do help to protect the unborn and to place some kind of marginal restrictions on abortionists and their actions. Are the provisions that the judge has knocked down, are they dead? What's the future of that part of the law?
They are, I would say, temporarily knocked down, because what tends to happen, and you can look at some of our past history with pro-life laws in Texas, but what tends to happen is, because it's the abortion industry that brings the first case, they get to choose what court it goes to, and they pick a judge in Austin that they know is friendly to their cause, and he will generally overturn the law, at least temporarily. What happens next is the state, the Attorney General's office, will appeal the law to the next court, which is the Federal Fifth Circuit District Court in New Orleans, and they have shown favorable to common sense pro-life measures in the past. They upheld the sonogram law. They upheld the rules allowing us to keep Planned Parenthood and their affiliates out of the women's health care program. So they kind of understand why some of these measures have been passed, and I think they're more friendly towards common sense restrictions. And so while the judge in Austin has overturned these provisions, the appeal is already being filed for an overturning of the judge's injunction. So we do expect that eventually these laws will be put back into place and effective.
I want your reaction to something that Cecile Richards, the president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America, had to say about the judge's decision to knock down these provisions in the Texas law. Ms. Richards said, "Today's ruling marks an important victory for Texas women and sends a clear message to lawmakers. It is unconstitutional for politicians to pass laws that take personal private decisions away from women and their doctors. While this ruling protects access to safe and legal abortion for women in many parts of the state, part of this ruling will make it impossible for many women to access medical abortion, which is safe and effective early in pregnancy." What are your reactions to her comments?
Well, anytime, and like I said, even the most common sense restrictions are fought against so hard. They say that we're taking away the right to an abortion, which that's not what we're doing at all. We're placing some common sense restrictions on them. So the question of abortion is not being asked. The question of a safe, common sense abortion, I mean, as far as, like I said, we don't approve of abortion, but common sense restriction, they make sense, and safety standards, they make sense. The abortion question is not being asked in this case. So whatever the judge had said, that's not something that they're being ruled on. And I think when she's talking about the medical abortions, she might have been referring to there are some cases in which the judge said that the medical abortion restrictions could be enforced. So he didn't issue an outright overturning of that provision, so I imagine she was probably speaking to the women who that may not apply to.
Do you think it's clear to the voters of Texas that what these kind of laws are attempting to do is to put the safe in the safe, legal, and rare? Although, obviously, those who oppose abortion do not want abortion to be legal or common. If it exists, we still want it to be safe. Do you think the Texas voters are understanding that?
I think this has become such a polarized issue that it's generally going to depend on how you feel about abortion in the first place, although it shouldn't. I think more people are aware of this issue because of the high turnout at the Capitol this summer, and because how loud the issue had become, because of the filibuster, because of all the publicity. I think more people are aware and are realizing that there is very high stakes. And I'm hoping that it is becoming more clear that it is about the safety of the woman.
Emily Horn is a member of the legislative team for Texas Right to Life. You'll find a link to Texas Right to Life under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Emily, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Folks, here is a great way that you can help us defend life from beginning to end. It's called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. It is our monthly or annual donor program. Now, if you join or you upgrade or you renew your membership in the Issues Etc. Reformation Club before Friday this week, you're eligible to win the Essential Lutheran Library. It's 9 books covering all of the essential in Lutheran reading that you need. It'll keep you busy for a long, long time. All you got to do is go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. If you are not a member of the Issues Etc. Reformation Club, you can join. If you are, please renew or upgrade your membership before Friday and become eligible for that Essential Lutheran Library. We will announce the winner of the Essential Lutheran Library on Friday, November the 1st. IssuesETC.org, click support, and look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. You'll find out all about the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll conclude our Christianity 101 series, talking with Pastor Stephen Parks about ecclesiastical power and civil affairs. We'll study the hymn, We Sing for All the Unsung Saints. Dr. Arthur Just will be our guest. Well, if the goal of these laws is safety, and that's certainly should be the goal of these laws, we always need to remember that that term safe is qualified when it comes to abortion, severely qualified. While it might be safer for women in some sense, that is, they survive the abortion or they are not subjected to complications or irresponsible medical procedures, which is quite common in that industry, it is never safe for the victim of abortion. Abortion, when successful as a medical procedure, always ends up with the death of the baby. So it's never really safe. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
How would you like to win the Essential Lutheran Library, a set of 9 Reformation resources, including the Lutheran Study Bible, Lutheran Service Book, Luther's Catechism, Treasury of Daily Prayer, the Lutheran Book of Prayer, Reading the Psalms with Luther, Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions, Law and Gospel, and the Lutheran Difference? If you join or renew your membership in our monthly or annual giving program, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club, by Reformation Day, October 31st, you're eligible to win the Essential Lutheran Library. We'll announce the winner on All Saints Day, November the 1st. You can find out about the benefits and levels of the Issues Etc. Reformation Club at issuesetc.org. Look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Or call Craig at 618-223-8385. Join or renew your membership in the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by Reformation Day, October the 31st.
Hey, St. Louis. How would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952. Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.